This year, of course, we'll be celebrating it on this Wednesday. But Guru Purnima falls on the full moon day in the lunar month of Ashar. And Buddhists, Jains, Hindus, they celebrate Guru Purnima by expressing or by paying homage and respects to their Guru. And also it's a day on which you show or express your gratitude to your Guru. Actually, this is also called Vyasa Purnima, and it happens to be the birthday of sage Vyas. It is Veda Vyas. We all know how in Mahabharata he is mentioned, he has written Mahabharata, and he is supposed to be the Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa, who is supposed to be a child of the fisherwoman or a fisher girl Satyavati and sage Parashar. This is also Veda Vyas, someone who is saving your Vedas from being destroyed, but he is also rearranging the Vedas. And it's a very complex thing because there are 28 Vyasas. Periodically they come and they rearrange the Vedas and things like that. So you can see that Vyasa is actually a very generic term. Vyasa actually means in Sanskrit the amplifier, the one who expands. And theosophically, HBB's explanation would be that this is the title applied to the personage, she would call Hierophant, who is present at what is called as initiation ceremony, Diksha. Theosophy speaks about 7 initiations through which you have to pass, and every Diksha ceremony is not a simple affair. You are first tested rigorously by your Guru, and then when you pass the test, it is then confirmed that you are ready to receive certain secret knowledge. And that secret knowledge is not just given out, because it's mostly in a symbolic form. So it is amplified, it is made clear, it is elaborated upon by this Hierophant, by this adept, by this initiate, who is termed as Vyasa also. And therefore Vyasa in Hindu tradition you might regard as the highest Guru. Now, as it goes, we are told that the Buddhists, they look upon this day, Guru Purnima, choose this day, Guru Purnima, as that day on which Buddha is supposed to have given his first sermon, you know, at Sarnath. And that's the Guru Purnima day for them. And similarly, those who follow yoga tradition, they say that at the helm or at the head of that whole line, you have someone like Shiva. He's called Adinath. And also the Adi Yogi, the first yogi. He is supposed to have given the science of yoga, which is not just the yogasanas that we do, but yoga is huge. It is that which brings the union of your lower with your divine nature. So that is the yoga which is supposed to have been taught by Shiva to first Saptarishis or the 7 rishis, and they in turn teach this to the whole humanity. In that sense, we say that Shiva becomes also the Adi Guru, the first Guru. Now, this is very interesting because theosophically it has a far greater meaning, deeper meaning, where, as one point in the secret doctrine, HBB says that how Shiva is a Mahaguru, and she describes him as an ever-living human banyan tree. What do we know about banyan tree? In the 15th chapter of the Gita, you have the name given to the banyan tree, and what is it? It's a tree which is really growing with roots above and branches below. If that is not so, even then the root is something from which the whole existence actually comes into being. But here, of course, Shiva becomes the root, and Shiva is also that being who, along with his sons Kartikeya and Ganesha, they are called the Kumaras in the actually theosophical philosophy. All of them, they presided over that very, very important event in human evolution, when man was without mind and he was given the light of mind. His mind was activated and endowed with power to choose, power to think. And at that point in time, humanity was also given knowledge. What knowledge? Every kind of knowledge. And that infant humanity was taught arts and sciences, agriculture, architecture, astrology, astronomy, and what have you, along with spiritual knowledge. And who presides over this whole process? We are told that it is this Mahaguru Shiva. Under his beneficent gaze, under his guidance, under his observation and supervision, the lesser and the higher divine instructors come to humanity and impart this wisdom to humanity. So that is the way in which he is Mahaguru. But he is also the great sacrifice. This will put the whole subject in perspective. Guru is a very loaded term. As you can see, if you just look at what Shiva is doing. Shiva, the Mahaguru, HPB very movingly describes, he has nothing to learn from this earthly existence or any other existence, because he knows all. And yet, he remains at the self-chosen post in the invisible atmosphere, directly in contact with humanity. Why? So that you and I, who are passing through this, what she calls the limitless desert of illusion, can reach our final goal of atma-sakshatkar, self-realization, union with the divine. Till the last human being has safely crossed this desert of illusion or the ocean of life and various names, he remains there, though he has nothing to derive. So he is a great sacrifice, and every guru is such a great sacrifice in that sense. So then, therefore, the term guru needs to be understood. The gurus, there are gurus and gurus. In the Hindu tradition, we differentiate between what is known as siksha guru and diksha guru. The siksha guru is all those gurus who give you instructions, who give you teachings, and diksha guru is someone far higher. He gives you initiation or diksha, as we said, after trying you out. Therefore, in the Hindu tradition, whereas in the English or in the Western languages, you might have only one word, teacher. In the Hindu tradition, you have more words. You have something like adhyapak and upadhyay. Then you have acharya, and then you have guru. All at different levels. Adhyapak and upadhyay are the ones who are instructors. They instruct you, they give you teachings. It's more of an intellectual knowledge. Acharya, as the very word is derived from acharan. Acharya is someone who is saying satyam vada dharmam chara. You speak the truth and you live the life. And that's exactly what he is doing in his own life. And he is setting an example. Unlike those teachers who teach you, this is the person additionally. He is also living the life and setting an example for society wherever they are. So there are those category of acharyas and gurus. And then there is the highest one, to whom, rightly speaking, we give the label of a guru. Guru. In Sanskrit, gu is supposed to be darkness or ignorance. And ru means remove. He is a remover of the darkness of ignorance by giving you the right knowledge, knowledge coupled with his realization, as Krishna would say in the 9th chapter of the Gita, of that highest category. How would he do it? He cannot do it unless and until he is going to also help you remove that whole avarana, that whole cover, which is of illusion and delusion, wherein we are identified with our personality. So his is a very tremendous task. He is not only verbally teaching, he is not only just setting an example, he is guiding you step by step. It is a very high stage where you reach a guru and meet a guru like that, who takes you up in his hands and teaches you, just like a mother teaches a child to walk, by walking with him, holding the hand, so that finally you reach the goal. So he says, tatatvam asi, thou art that. You have the divinity within you. First he opens your eyes to something about which you are not even aware. And then he waits patiently by giving a hint here and a hint there, by making adjustment in your mind and in your nature, correcting you at the right time so that you are able to say, aham brahmosmi, I am verily that. But the whole process requires breaking, preserving and remaking. And no wonder you have therefore the Sanskrit shloka which says, Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Devo Maheshwara, Guru Shakshat Parabrahma, Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. He is Brahma, he is Vishnu and he is also Shiva. Destroying the unnecessary or helping you rather to destroy the non-essential so as to regenerate yourself. This is the task of that highest Guru, who therefore is destroying what? Your personal nature. Our reading begins by saying that give up thy life if thou wouldst live. And the footnote says, give up the life of personality if you really want to live the life of spirituality or spiritual nature. And that is why you have lots of saintly people. A saint in Punjab says, jab se maine suna hai ki jeene ka naam marna hai, tab se kafan sir pe bandhe fir raha hu, dhoond raha hu us katil ko. What is he saying? Since the time I've heard that to die is to live and to live is to die, I am in search of that person who will kill me and yet keep me alive. And who is that? That is this Guru who kills you in your personality or helps you kill that wrong attachments. What is that personality? The attachment with the body, attachment with your knowledge, your ideas, your possessions, and so many material and worldly things, passions, desires and whatnot. One by one, he makes you see these are non-essentials. Shed them. And then slowly, he takes you step by step nearer to who you really are. So he is doing the process of killing you in one sense in order to regenerate and bring that real aspect alive. And that is also why someone like Kabir is bringing home, you can say, the truth before us by saying, agar sheesh diye guru mile to bhi sasta sauda jaan. Even if you have to give up your head in order to get a guru, consider that to be a very cheap deal. Saste mein mil gaya. Because that guru is very difficult to get. Someone who will lead you to the path of Atma Sakshatkar. Someone who will open your eyes to understand that all these are mithya. And the only real is that the real essence which is within you. And that is why that same Kabir, we never forget those couplet from him who is saying, Guru Gobind dono khade, taake lagu paaye, balihari guru aapno, jin Gobind dio milaye. So it's a very moving couplet which shows that, I mean, occasion which very few would have, that there is a Govind or a God standing there and there is also a Guru standing there and he is wondering, whose feet do I touch first, of the God or of Guru? But he says, if the Guru was not there, would I even experience the presence of God? So, I would first touch the feet of Guru. So, although that shloka says that Guru is the very Brahman, he says he is even beyond Brahman because it is he who is taking you to really realize the Brahman. This is Kabir. So this is the Guru, and a lot which is superlatively written about Guru obviously applies to this Guru. Now are we at that plane? Are we at that stage where we deserve to be in company of this Guru who will take you up by your hand and show you the path and take you step by step? In theosophy, we put only the masters of wisdom at that particular place and plane. And therefore, you have the very first quotation, which we will not read in the handout, where very beautifully you have William Judge telling us that it's not just that guru that you have to keep looking up to, because there is a long way to go. Not just one life, not just 10 lives. It's a question of myriads of lives before which you will prepare yourself, where you can now be ready to meet a guru like that who will reach you to the final goal. Till then what? Till then there is a whole guru parampara chain. It's a very beautiful idea. That Guru Parampara chain, it starts with the teacher who taught you alphabets in your nursery or KG. And then it goes on. The teacher who taught you in school, the teacher who taught you in college, and then that teacher who is someone who tells you that there is really something more in life. And so on and on. You have degrees and degrees of these teachers and gurus. We can see they are there in the world today also. So this is that whole chain. What are you to do? You might sometimes get good teachers, you might get wrong teachers, you have false gurus and good gurus and all that happens. But what is it that we are asked to do? It all comes to us under karma. A good teacher in school or a good teacher of life is our karma. It is depending on our karma. You get the guru you deserve. What is the direction in which I was going? According to that, I will be attracted to that guru. It may happen that the guru doesn't give me the right system. It may happen that the teacher in the school doesn't give me the right knowledge or in a way that I would understand. All that is under karma. But what is your attitude? And this is something elaborated upon very beautifully in Letters That Have Helped Me, where William Jack says, your attitude as it is given in the East should be that of reverence and respect. No matter what the guru, he has come to you under karma. And in the East, he says, it is considered to be a kind of a blasphemy. And it will hurt your moral being in a very bad way if you do not give respect to that teacher, no matter who it is. That is the teacher and you have to pay and give respect. Over a period of time, you will overcome karma. And if you have given due respect, you will be brought in the touch with the right kind of teacher and the right kind of guru. So, this is a very important point for us. Another thing is that highest guru you cannot meet unless and until you pass the chain. This chain has to be passed. And don't try to bypass. This has a theosophical context. Theosophy also had line of these teachers, not the masters straight away, William Judge, H.P. Blavatsky, Robert Crosby in his own right. And what happened? Mr. Judge has to write that she, that is H.P. Blavatsky, is a very important link in the Guru Parampara chain. And those who think they will bypass and straight away try and reach the masters, they are sadly mistaken. You are not revering the person who has been sent to you as a guru, and you think that you have reached that level and laikat, as they say, worthiness to be in the presence of the masters. That itself shows your arrogance and lack of humility. So, this whole Guru Parampara chain is very important. Now here if we see the highest one, so to speak, in the Hindu tradition, as we say, the masters, and Mr. Judge has to go on record saying that they are the very Atman and they are the very law of karma. So also, if you see Gita or the scriptures, they will say, who is the highest guru? Krishna within, the Atman within. And some teachers have taken it forward and therefore said that this Atman or Krishna is in everything. And therefore, there is not an iota of space or even a particle of matter where the Krishna is not there. And so you have this thing, most of the Indians and Hindus would be familiar with Lord Dattatreya. Dattatreya with three heads. The three heads are Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. And what does he say? He is going in the jungle and King Yadu meets. Very impressed with the kind of peaceful, kind of a expression on the face, very cheerful, very happy. And he says, how is it that you are so peaceful, you are so calm, you are radiating such a kind of aura and magnetism? He says, yeah, because I have had Atma Sakshatkar. I have come in contact with the divine within me. Who was your guru? That same divine is my guru, but let me tell you, I find that the entire creation is my guru. The whole of nature is my guru, and we know He had 24 gurus. The time will not permit. It would be very interesting to go through them. But a few we will see. You should have an eye for it. And you will see, yes, the whole creation is your guru. So he begins with the Panchamahabhuta, the five tattvas. Begins with earth and says, what did earth teach me? The earth taught me patience, dhiraj, tolerance, sahanshilta. But why? We ourselves say, Dharti Mata cannot take any more of the violence. Dharti Mata cannot take any more of this selfishness. Don't we say that? What is the Dharti Mata? Science, someone like James Lovelock has to also recognize that there is a Gaia hypothesis which he gives and says that this earth is a living being. And that living being, according to theosophy, is made up of atoms, what we call as lives. And what are we doing? We are all the time are having so many negativities in thoughts, by violence, by harshness, by corruption and what have you. You mean to say they are just disappearing somewhere? No. Everything is impinging and keeping, making an impress on the lives which make the Mother Earth. Or Gaia, or whatever you say. And then what does theosophy say? Then comes a point where, so to speak, the Mother Earth can't bear it anymore. And it all reaches an exploding point. And then you have tsunami, earthquake, volcanic eruption. But she bears a lot. So very rightly the observation says that I learned from the Mother Earth. Patience and tolerance. And I learned from her that she doesn't seek anything but gives, gives and gives. What do? We just sow the seeds, that's all. And then you have the bountiful crop which the Mother Earth gives you. And asks you anything in return? Nothing. So also, I thought I learned to give, give and give. And then he sees the air and says that no matter how much the things are there around in the atmosphere which are polluting, the air still manages to remain pure. And so also we remain morally pure in spite of being surrounded by all that is going on in Kali Yuga. And then straight away we would say that he sees the child. And again, a very, very important lesson the child teaches is that don't care for honor or dishonor. Man, pana, apamana. What is all that to child? Just a few Sundays back we had learning to be childlike. And the beautiful, one feels the characteristic of child which you feel that you should imbibe is that innocence with which it forgets. You've scolded the child and in 2 minutes it comes back running and clings to you. No man, no apman, no hurt, no ill feeling. That is what he says I learned from child. And the child also taught me to really have sahaja ananda. Most of us today especially, require something to be happy. Television, movies, parties, material things, possession, money, books or what have you. One of the things is missing. You go into depression, you feel you have ceased to exist and you are very unhappy. And he says the child taught me that he's just happy. There is no reason. Is something which you see in a saint and you see in a child, but not in between. So that is what we need to learn. He is saying, I learned that. And the dancing woman says, don't expect anything from anyone. You just do what you are supposed to do. And of course, as we said, time will not permit. So he learns also from the spider. Many people must have learned from spider. It looks like something which you just don't even observe. But we have all learned some form of writing or a poem which praises what in spider? The perseverance. It's not easy to weave that web, huh? If you have ever watched, and many have done that watching, how he weaves the web. I think Dalpatram has written a poem which unfortunately we don't remember in Gujarati. Karta jaal karoliyo, boy padi pachadai. How many times he is making and weaving the web and how many times he falls down on the ground, picks himself up, picks up a strand, climbs up and again continues weaving And how many times would he not do that? And ultimately we were where? Perseverance is what I learned from that. And what you should not do, I learned from pigeons. You watch. Most of the animals and birds have their mating season, but pigeons, in and out of season, every time you see, there is mating. So procreation is not something you indulge in all the time. Sex and sexual energy. I think Friday we were reminded. There are two avenues through which you are wasting your divine power. One is speech, useless, shop talk. And the other is this sex. So, seeing the pigeons, I learned that no, procreation only to bring up a good progeny, and that is all. One can go on with all the 24 gurus and God knows what we would learn. But this just shows that, as Light on the Path says, no man is your enemy, no man is your friend, all alike are your teachers. All alike are your teachers. It's not as if the good man, by setting an example of his life, teaches you, but a bad man, by going down, teaches us. We do see someone who smokes and drinks, takes drugs, and then one day found dead in a gutter, found dead in a house, nobody knows, and you feel, never. This is the worst vice that I can give into. Also, come across a person who is bad in some way, unwholesome as the Buddhists would say, with some unwholesome quality rather than calling evil or bad. Maybe very harsh, maybe very gossipy, maybe greedy for money, whatever it is. You have to deal with the person. Just like a mother learns something in dealing with an unruly child and she says, this child is teaching me patience. So also every person of that nature teaches us something if we long enough remain and try to understand the person. And that's in a way one of the meanings. Just Friday we were saying, charity covereth multitude of sins does not mean physical charity. Being charitable to every kind of nature which is quite inimical as far as we are concerned. If you become charitable, you are going to learn something because you will make some inner adjustment to adjust to that nature. So all are teaching us something or the other, and so there are so many gurus. And yet, of course, you do need a guru. And who is it that can say, I need a guru? Someone who has prepared himself. Theosophy puts a demarcation between the ordinary people of the world who definitely take a step towards becoming a disciple. You can't really go in search of a guru or say, I want a guru, just because other people are talking about this guru and that guru. It's not something that people go in a bazaar and because my neighbor has bought, I also want it. There is something like coming to a stage when you are very badly wanting that guidance and do you have a need for that guru. Now there are two ways. One, people stumble upon a guru. That is what is happening more often than not. How does that happen? The need is very real. And what is the need? There is some calamity. There is some problem. And of course, most of the time we do not want to go through what karma brings to us. And so many of us want what they call today as quick fix solution. Do something but bring me out of this. Or there is some desire to be satisfied. And as we live in a world, it's not as if we are looking down upon or trying to comment and be judgmental, but do we not now and then read about? And we don't cover all of them, but some Swami, some Baba here and there. People will say, go to that Swami or go to that Baba and he will have the solution. And this is not us saying, articles come in the magazine and newspaper. One article particularly is saying that these are the people we would describe as spiritual service providers. You see, there are service providers. If my gas burner is not okay, there is a service provider who will put it right and if my tap is not working properly, there is a service provider called plumber who will come and do the servicing. And then the television thing is to be put right, a service provider. These are spiritual service provider, which is very euphemistically used term. What does that writer mean? And goes on to say that today you find that someone doesn't get a job, tries very hard. Then they will say, go to certain Baba. He is a specialized in that. He will tell you to do something and you will get a job. Your daughter can't get married, go to certain other Baba and he will do that. You want a break in a modeling career, go to certain other one and so on. So there is that also going on. There are genuine Swamis, Babas, Gurus, what we call as New Age Gurus, we won't say no. But these are articles which are waking us up and saying, with what intention are you looking for help and aid and Guru? That's the kind of person. Then what happens? Once that I have got the desired thing, once the calamity is averted, I just go and follow that person. I don't see, I don't question. He has helped me, he has taken it out of the me out of the difficulty, I blindly follow. And then one fine day you come also across some story where you find this particular person, his name is involved in sex scandal, in money scandal, this also keeps happening. So there are false gurus and there are true gurus. As Jesus in his times had to also warn people and say, lo here and lo there. There are false messiahs and there are the real messiahs, you see. So these messiahs, these teachers, these prophets and gurus, the true and the false have always been there. So it is always the duty of one who is searching for them to find out. But who can do that? Not the one who is only wanting solution to his mundane problems. That's a very, very poor reason why we are searching for a guru. Someone who will keep solving your problems. A true guru is who? A true guru, first of all, is humble. Someone who will not say, behold, I know, and you better follow what I say. But someone who says, thus have I heard. And he will also try to see that you go through his philosophy, and as Robert Crosby says, the masters give philosophy, and there, they only suggest. They don't say, better follow it. They give you also means for verifying it. So is the law of karma and reincarnation given and said, because HPB has given, so follow it, or because the masters have given? But in fact, we are given arguments supporting reincarnation. So that you can verify yourself if there is anything like rebirth or not. That is a true guru. He wants you to really exercise your reason. And most certainly, he wants you to give heart response. Intuitive kind of a, you can say, how will I say it? Intuitively give a response to the teachings that he is giving. So we need to develop both, our reason and our intuition. Only then we will not fall prey to the wrong teacher and the wrong teachings, and therefore we are told, from the teachings to the teacher. Always see the teachings which are given, and in the process it may happen. This also is a question, what do you do? Good articles come, who don't straight away condemn these teachers, but say that there are levels. And some of these gurus and teachers are still on their way to becoming perfect beings. And Theosophy says, going with Shankaracharya and which we were told on Friday, that there are so many levels to perfection. In between stage, there is always a possibility of falling down. We don't condemn the teacher or guru and say, oh, wo sab aise hi hai. Not that. We understand that the teachings that he is trying to give, is it making sense? We follow it. We then don't look at the person. And this is very, very important. It is very important not to do what is called Vyakti Puja. That is where the problem comes when we take anyone to be a guru. You have to see whether that person is giving a sound philosophy and you follow the philosophy and not the person. Very nicely comes through by our teachers who have all three gone on record saying that. First, Robert Crosby. Look at that quotation which says, "It is not the best thing to rely upon any living person. I mean to the extent of idealizing him. For if such an one should be swept into seeming darkness for a time, its effect would be not good and might dishearten you." Someone you have been holding in high esteem, and then you read in the papers, he's come in the biggest money scandal. He has been taking money from people and whatever. Living in ash karta hai and all, whatever. Or sex scandal. We know pride and sex are the two most difficult evils which you can overcome. They are the last to go. And therefore, most of the time, it is pride, ego, which becomes a stumbling block, or the sex. And they get involved there. So it's a very tricky business. The safest thing is from the teachings to the teacher. See if the philosophy is sound. Let us not worry and let us not make the mistake of following the person. And so even HPP says, do not follow me nor my path, but follow the path I show. And judge being so humble, writing to someone who is greatly admiring and putting him up on a high place, he's saying, please do not put me up on a pedestal. I am like you, walking on the path. Tomorrow you may find that you are ahead of us all. You may open the door for us and we will pass through. Extreme humility of William Judge to say to some co-worker that you might be ahead of us, or you can go ahead of us spiritually. So please do not worship the personality. Take the teachings. If we keep this in mind, there will be a fewer heartache. So from the teachings to the teacher is the best kind of a maxim to follow. And obviously, therefore, theosophy will never say that go in search for a guru. As very nicely this story comes in the Buddhist philosophy, there is a person called Pukkusati who has studied all the teachings of Buddha, whatever is available, the Dhamma, has tried to practice. And now he feels, let me see who is this exalted one. I must meet him. So it's like going in search of Buddha. And hardly has he gone a little distance. It is night time. There is the Dharamshala. And he's waiting, he's taking refuge there in one room. Buddha also is giving his Dhamma and he has to rest somewhere. He comes to the same Dharamshala. Now all the rooms are filled. This one has only one person, so the owner says, do you mind sharing your room with this person? And Buddha agrees. They talk. And Buddha finds out that the person is saying that he is in search of one exalted one called Buddha. And Buddha says, have you seen him? He says, no. Would you recognize him if you see him? No. Then Buddha starts giving him, it is said in the story, the sevenfold nature of man. The man is not just the physical body, but he is Atma, Buddhi, Manas, so on. He teaches. And the man was prepared from the teachings to the teacher. He has completely understood and applied the Dhamma that Buddha had given so far. So he prostrates and says, I have found the exalted one. So we are told, when the pupil is ready, the master appears. When the materials are ready, the architect appears. So don't go searching for a guru. When the time comes, you will hear, you will know what to do and what not to do and where to go. Do not be in a hurry to go in search. Now, we come to that also, the crucial aspect of the guru. As we said, there is the highest, then there is the intermediate, and there is that which is forming the base. And that base is formed by teacher. The teacher also is given respect and love on a Guru Purnima day. So, what is it that should be there in that teacher which really makes that teacher sort of, you know, become worthy of what is given in the shloka? Matrudevo Bhava, Pitrudevo Bhava, Acharya Devo Bhava. People are writing lots of articles these days and justified, because we do find the whole thing deteriorating to a certain extent, you know. The education as it is being given in schools and colleges. And we would not again say, please don't misunderstand us, that all teachers are put in the same category. But where is that? Gurukul system and those teachers, where is that? The few years back those teachers were there, and what you see now, again not all, but by and large there is some kind of a complaint coming that something is going wrong with the whole thing set up. So what is that which is expected? It is said that this story is not a story but a true thing, which gives you some hint, though not that you will be called and equated with Deva, but some hint as to what is it that is expected of a teacher, even a school teacher. This is about a little boy called Teddy, and probably you all might have read about it. And he's in the fifth standard, and we are told that the teacher, Mrs. Thompson, obviously is always saying, I love you all of you equally, and she's feeling guilty because she finds that this person, this little boy Teddy, is not mixing with anyone, he's not paying attention in study, he's very, sometimes dozing off in the class and all. So, fails also. So, she is not particularly taking much liking for this particular student. But the school has tradition that every teacher, when takes up a new class, has to go through sort of a record which is maintained for every child by previous teachers writing remarks about the child. So, in the fifth standard, she goes to the first standard teacher's record. What she has written is, he's an extremely bright child. Very enthusiastic, very cheerful. Second standard teacher, same thing. Third standard teacher has made a remark, a bright child, but now pays less attention. His mother is suffering from terminal illness. So, he's greatly troubled. The fourth standard teacher says he has lost his mother and he pays no attention. Special attention must be given to him, else he will not be able to continue the study. The fifth standard teacher has read all this and got the whole perspective for the child. Now this is the teacher who then now decides this is a different case, not of a boy who doesn't like to study. As it happens, it is Christmas time very soon, and all children come and give all the most beautiful presents, very nicely wrapped and all that. And last comes Teddy in a, you know, shopping bag, the brown paper bag, something heavy is there, which he hands over to the teacher. And teacher wants to see what this child has given. She opens and finds a bracelet, you know, those bracelet, not with the rubies and diamonds kind of thing, but colorful stones are there. Most of the stones have come out, and that bracelet is given. And all the other boys start laughing, poking fun. And then comes out a perfume bottle. 3/4 is used. Hardly little perfume is there. The teacher is very sensitive now because she knows the background. So she just says, oh, wow, Teddy, you have given me the best gift. What a lovely bracelet it is. So loudly that other children are quiet now. She immediately wears. She puts perfume. And that's the end of it. Everybody is quiet. They go. The next day, evening, Teddy waits for the teacher to come and says, you know, Mrs. Thompson, you smell just like my mother when you put that perfume. This made the child bold to come near the teacher and talk to her and say something personal. And then Mrs. Thompson knows what she's to do. So she's puts more and more and more attention and care. And of course, he picks up. Now he has attention. Now he has care, which he was lacking when the mother has gone. So, passes out with the very good marks, 6th standard, 7th standard. But one thing he never forgets is to write a note to Mrs. Thompson saying, Mrs. Thompson, you are the best teacher I have ever come across. It goes on up to college level till he becomes a doctor, an MD. The note still comes to her saying that, You are the best and my favorite teacher in all my life. And the climax is when he has to marry. When now the note comes, and that is the greatest thing that any teacher can expect, where he says, I am getting married, but I have neither father nor mother. Would you take the place to be the mother to the groom? And she happily agrees, goes wearing the bracelet and the perfume. After the marriage, they both hug each other. And what does the child say? Thank you for believing in me. And thank you for really giving me a chance to prove myself. And teacher says, you got it wrong. Thank you for believing in me and giving me a chance and prove myself. And after meeting you for the first time, I stopped teaching only subject. I became a real teacher. That says a lot. A real teacher molds the child. A real teacher understands the child. A real teacher does what? Prepares the child for the life. Not for nothing that we are today again and again saying, it's not IQ which is important, it is EQ which is important. Emotional quotient. Why should Daniel Goleman write a whole book called Emotional Intelligence? So many people read and there is a criticism or write what you can call as they mention it again and again. Because that's what is lacking today. Why is it that children, just because they fail in 12th standard or they don't get the marks or they are not chosen for a particular kind of a drama, don't get a place there, or they don't stand first in the competition, and all those things which matter very little become the most important and they commit suicide. They go into depression. Why? Because we are, as HPB says, teaching them to read and write, and you are churning out reading and writing candidates for starvation, are her words. So what is more that is required is, doesn't matter if he at the end of life doesn't become a doctor or CEO of the company, he might remain still a clerk, but he carries himself well through all the calamities of life and becomes self-dependent. He knows how to behave with other human beings. He understands value of people and not of money, and so on and so forth. That's teacher. It's not for nothing that the student can remember so many writers who would say, if I am there today, thanks to my teacher. I used to be a very naughty boy. I never paid attention, but my teacher not only taught me the subject, but something more. This is teacher, you see. So then, how are we going to really pay our homage and what they call as Guru Dakshina? What Guru Dakshina are we going to give? It is to the gurus. Then we are certainly going to study what they have given and make its application. But this is not just about those gurus which we have not seen and we won't see. God knows for how many lives, as I think Voice of the Silence says, that those masters whom you dost not see, but whom thou feelest, will keep feeling them. But what about those other gurus who might have been in the body, who we might have known? How are we going to give Guru Dakshina to them? And this is a crucial point. Why we are bringing that point is very crucial. There is again the story which comes in the earlier issues of the Theosophical Movement. It's a symbolic story where you have a guru or a teacher and he is preaching, going from place to place. And he's preaching also to the lowly people. So a Shudra is there and appropriate to him, he is taught the lessons of life. And the Shudra says, Master, what can I give you? But I have this very faithful dog. He served me the whole life and I am sure he will serve you also in the right way. So he goes with the dog, and it seems that as they are going, he is resting somewhere. The dog is really the servant, and you will understand what it is. The dog picks up the begging bowl, holds it in the mouth and runs to find out where he can get food for the guru, and comes across a king who is also resting under the tree with the whole retinue, and there he is. He puts that bowl, and of course, king knows, and therefore puts in all the food and all that, picks it up, comes back. The guru is given that, goes to the nearby river and brings water. The king follows the dog. Whose dog is this? Who is doing this? Because he recognizes Bhiksha Patra, you know. Like the bhikshus have, this also is a teacher like that. So he comes and meets. He is also given all the sermons as to who is a good king and all that, the duties of a king. What does he give? You don't want wealth, you don't want riches. I also have a hunting dog. Let me give you as a gift. This whole thing is an allegory. It's a symbolic thing. The two dogs are the two disciples of two kinds, you see. So one is actually called Das. The other is called Mitra, the king's dog. The Mitra is a handsome dog. He recognizes the greatness of the guru, and always when the guru is going for preaching from one place to another, he's walking ahead, as it were, as a forerunner, and the way in which he carries himself, almost as if his feet are saying, see, how wonderful is my master. That's what he feels within, but that's about all. The other one, he's hardly to be seen near the guru. All that he will do is always try and find out, going somewhere in the by lanes, which is the shortest route which my guru can follow. He will always run and find out food, so that he will go to some ordinary person's house, put the bhiksha patra, and a lady will fill it up and wonder. He himself looks so tired. He's a very thin dog. Instead of eating the food himself, he's carrying it for the master. Let me go and see who he is. So with her children and husband, she will come to the master and then listen to him. So this is what the person, this dog is doing. Now the guru dies. That dog who ran in front of the guru saying, how wonderful thou art, my master, is heartbroken. He is sorrowful, and people look at him now and say, how sad, his master has died. The other one, what is his work? His work is to serve, and he continues to serve. Now he serves the wayfarers who are on the road. He finds the short route for them. He finds shady place for them. He finds some way of helping out. He is doing it. This is an allegory. And therefore, people look at him and say, his master is still alive because his teachings are still being practiced. This is what is a very moving, very important allegory, because most of the time when a guru is in a body, what happens? The guru is gone. Everything is over. No. The guru is gone, everything is not over. The guru has left behind his heart and soul, and that is his teachings. And that is what you are supposed to give and also practice. And this is the allegory, therefore, tells us what is the greatest guru dakshina. What is the guru dakshina which you can give? And as a senior student used to say, guru would eagerly wait and see, not the highest guru, but any other, that shishya mara karta savayo thai. That he should beat me and even go ahead of me, and he would feel very happy. That's the way in which you live the life. This is something which is just a fragmentary outline on a subject which is really not very easy to speak on. We have two questions, and mostly we feel that we have answered them. The first one is talking about, you have parents and teachers in childhood, school teachers little later. We also start following some other spiritual teachers. Do we owe them anything? How best one must pay the real guru? Is it sufficient to keep them in our heart and follow their path? So we have explained, we did cover this point, whether it is a school teacher or whether it is an intermediate guru or whether it is the highest guru, the best way you pay homage is to remember the slightest, smallest lesson that they have taught, and the knowledge which they have given, you apply. Because after all, you can't learn the lessons of life unless and until the right knowledge is also there. Some Sundays back we had seen, sometimes we don't know what the lesson this particular situation has to teach me. And that requires some wisdom, that requires an insight. And that insight, that wisdom comes when we study the teachings, reflect upon them, meditate upon them. Then we know that what is this situation trying to teach me. So that's what we do. And the other one is we see many religious teachers in the society. They also encourage people to blindly follow them. They make them pay good money as charity for building their ashram. How can they be called spiritual if they are attached to material things and they count number of followers? Do we have to disconnect from such teachers? So many of them are also involved in scandals and so on. This part was also covered. That yes, unfortunately, and that is why we have to only keep our eyes open. The blind word must be underlined and double underlined. Never, never do any blind following. Even if the teaching appears to be absolutely something which is given by a person in whom you have complete faith, whose name is not involved in any scandal, doesn't take money, even then, as our teachers are saying, to have faith in the teachings because you have faith in some person is to have counterfeit faith. It's not a genuine faith. That moment, it is possible that that person is in some way mistaken. One day you will find the person was mistaken in giving these teachings. So bad. So many years you have applied it, so many years you have followed him and done it, thinking that he is right. That is not the genuine faith. The genuine faith is that faith when it coincides with your own intuition. So don't be in a hurry to take the system which is given and somehow fit into your ideas which you are holding. Don't be in a hurry to reject because it doesn't fit in with what I am holding. But wait. And as William Judd says, unripe fruits get ripe. It's a question of your level of development. Sometimes we are not at a level where we can appreciate the teachings which are given. And it's not necessary that just because it is said by my guru, whoever, he can't be wrong, you see. This is not something which a guru will like. HPB will certainly not like. She will say, let it pass through the mill of your own mind. To the mentally obtuse and lazy, theosophy must remain a riddle, is what she has said. And therefore, let us keep it aside and try and verify and then integrate it with our beliefs. Nor be in a hurry to reject, because I come from a certain background and in our tradition, this is not said. Our tradition can be wrong. So let me evaluate. So this is the whole thing. So the whole burden doesn't lie on guru. The burden lies on the seeker. The seeker has to be awake. The seeker has to be humble. The seeker has to be always having faith which is not blind, but faith which is reasoned faith and intuitive faith. And as I think one of the writers, very fine writer, Jagsuraya, has written a small article, but puts the point very clearly, that there is a fine line between gullibility and the other one where you say cynicism. Cynicism is you reject. Gullibility, you accept. The line between them is the razor's edge, which he calls as keep the faith skeptically. Very beautiful. As Alexander Pope has also said, there lies more faith in an honest doubt than in 1,000 creeds of the world. Honest doubt is not doubting unnecessarily. It's an honest doubt. I'm waiting to get the proper understanding, then I will accept it. And so don't be gullible, don't be cynic, but be an honest doubter. Thank you.